So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, new canto, canto 11, chapter 1, text 1. Sri Sukha Uvacha, Kritva Daitya Vadham Krishna, Sadamo Yadubi Vrita, Uvataraya Baram Yavistam Janayan Kalim Shri Sukha Uvacha Kritva Daitya Vadam Krishna Sarano Yadubir Vrita Uvavatarayad Bhadam Javistam Janayan Kalim Kritva Daitya Vadam Krishna Saramano Yadubivrita Bhuva Vataradhyad Bhadam Javistam Janayan Kalim
Sri Sukha Vacha
Sukha said,
Kritva,
having performed,
Daitya,
of the demons, Vadham, the killing, Krishna, Lord Krishna, Sadramha, accompanied by Balaram, Yadubi, by the Yadus, Rita, surrounded, Bhuva, of the earth, Avatarayat,
caused by listening,
Bharam,
the burden,
Yavishtam,
most sudden,
leading to violence,
Janayan,
raising,
Kalim,
a state of quarrel.
Translation,
Sri Sukha Goswami said, Lord Krishna, accompanied by Balaram and surrounded by the Yadu dynasty, executed killing of many demons, Then further, to remove the burden of the earth, the Lord arranged for the great battle of Kurukshetra, which suddenly erupted in violence between the Kurus and the Pandavas. Responsively, Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Lord Krishna, accompanied by Balaram and surrounded by the Yadu dynasty, executed the killing of many demons. Then further to remove the burden of the earth, the Lord arranged for the great battle of Kurukshetra, which suddenly erupted in violence between the Kurus and the Pandavas. Somebody thinks I'm thirsty. So this is a new section of the Bhagavatam. The curse upon the Yadu dynasty. I just should have read the first preamble to it. This chapter gives a hint of the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, which took place owing to the appearance of an iron club. Hearing this narration is a great impetus for becoming detached from this material world. Lord Sri Krishna expertly arranged the great Kurukshetra battle between the Kurus and the Pandavas and thus removed a great extent of the earth's burden. But the Supreme Lord, whose influence is inconceivable, was not yet satisfied because of the continued presence of the undefeatable Yadu family. The Lord desired to bring about the destruction of the Yadu dynasty so that he could completely wind up his pastimes on earth and go back to his own abode. Using the pretense of a curse by an assembly of brahmanas, he withdrew his entire dynasty from the surface of the earth. By Sri Krishna's desire, many great sages headed by Narad and Vishwamitra assembled at the holy place named Pindaraka near the city of Dwarka. The young boys of the Yadu family, absorbed in a playful mood, also arrived there. These boys dressed Samba in the guise of a pregnant woman about to give birth and inquired from the sages about the fruitfulness of Samba's so-called pregnancy. The sages cursed the mocking boys by saying, "She shall give birth to a club that will destroy your family." The Yadus, frightened by this curse, immediately lifted the garment from Samba's abdomen and found a club. Hurrying to the assembly of Ugrasena, the king of the Yadus, they offered a report of everything that had taken place. Fearing the Brahmana's curse, Yadu Raj Ugrasena ordered the club grounded to powder and thrown into the ocean. Within the ocean, a fish swallowed the last remaining lump of iron. The waves carried all the bits of ground powder to the shore, where they were implanted and eventually grew into a grove of cane. Fishermen caught the fish, and a hunter named Jara used the iron lump found in its belly to fashion an arrow. Although the Supersoul, Lord Krishna, understood what was happening, he did not wish to do anything to counteract it. Rather, in the form of time, he sanctioned these events. So actually that little piece of metal that Yara formed eventually is the arrow that shot Krishna in the foot. So the translation to this text that we've just repeated, purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam begins with a reference to the pastimes executed by Lord Krishna in the 10th canto. The beginning of the 10th canto describes that when the earth was overwhelmed by demoniac rulers, the personified earth, Bhumi, approached Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes, begging for relief. And Brahma immediately went with the demigods to approach the Supreme Lord in his form of Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. As the demigods waited respectfully on the shore of the ocean of milk, the Supreme Lord announced through Brahma that he would soon incarnate on earth and that the demigods should also descend to assist in his pastimes. Thus, from the very beginning, Lord Krishna's appearance, it was understood that he would descend to the earth to remove the demons. Srila Prabhupada states in his commentary to the Bhagavad Gita 16.6, those who agree to obey the injunctions of the revealed scriptures are known as demigods, whereas those who defy the order of the Vedic scriptures are known as asuras or demons. The Vedic literatures are presented within the universe for the guidance of the conditioned souls who are trapped under the three modes of material nature and who are therefore rotating in a continuous cycle of birth and death. By strictly adhering to the Vedic injunctions, we can easily satisfy our material needs and at the same time make tangible progress on the way back home, back to Godhead. Thus we can achieve eternal life of bliss and knowledge in the Lord's own abode simply by obeying the Lord's instructions as they are presented in the Vedic literatures, such as the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. The demons, however, minimize or even mock the absolute authority of the Supreme Lord and his teachings. Because these asuras envied the sovereign status of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they minimize the importance of the Vedic scriptures, which emanate directly from the breathing of the Lord. The demons establish a society governed by their own concocted whims and inevitably create chaos and misery, especially for pious living entities who sincerely desire to follow the will of God. Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita that when there is a predominance of such chaotic, irreligious societies on earth, he personally descends to rectify the imbalance. Thus, from the very beginning of his transcendental infancy, Krishna systematically killed the powerful asuras or demons, who were an intolerable burden for the earth. Lord Krishna was assisted by his brother Balaram, who is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although God is one, he can expand himself to enjoy in many forms at once, that is, his omnipresence. And the first such expansion is Balaram or Baladev. Balaram killed many noteworthy demons, including Dhanukasura, Vida, and the envious Rukmi. Krishna was also accompanied by the members of the Yadu dynasty, many of whom were demigods who had descended to assist the Lord. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, however, has revealed that although many demigods had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty to assist the Lord, some members of the Yadu dynasty were actually inimical towards Krishna. Because of their mundane vision of the Lord, they considered themselves to be on the same level as Krishna, having taken birth in the family of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. They had inconceivable strength, and thus they misunderstood Krishna's supreme position. Having forgotten that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they would constitute a great burden, and consequently, it was necessary for Krishna to remove them from the earth. There is a popular saying that familiarity breeds contempt. To destroy the contemptuous members of his own dynasty, the Lord caused a quarrel between them. For this purpose, he arranged for Narad and the other sages to display anger against the Karshnas, the members of his family. Although many Yadus who were devoted to Krishna were apparently killed in this fratricidal war, Lord Krishna actually returned them to their original positions as universal directors or demigods. It is the Lord's promise in Bhagavad Gita that he will always protect those who are favourable to him in his service. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, has given a summary of the entire 11th canto as follows. Chapter 1 describes the beginning of the Masula Lila, or the prelude to the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. Chapter 2 through 5 describes the conversations between the 9 Yagendras and King Nimi. Chapter 6 describes the prayers of Lord Brahma, Shiva, and other residents of heaven. Chapter 7 through to 29 presents the conversation between Krishna and Uddhava, and that is known as the Uddhava Gita. And chapter 30 describes the withdrawal of the Yadu dynasty from the earth. The final chapter describes the disappearance of Lord Krishna. Om Agyana Timiranda Shyaganjana Shalakya Chakshurmili Tamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Bhagaya Krishna Bhastai Vatale Shimati Vridai Nanda Goswami Niti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Bhagaya Krishna Bhastai Vatale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharani Nevasesha Shinivani Pashachari Shatarani. Wow, that's a hell of a purport. This is a really interesting section of the Bhagavatam that we're coming to. Isn't it amazing how in this purport here that you can even be part of Krishna's family and you have an animosity towards Krishna? And it's absolutely fascinating. So I was just going to mention, as we're starting this new section of the Bhagavatam, about believing in the Bhagavatam and how amazing these stories are. They're not just fictitious stories. They're not just something that are made up. It's not like a Lord of the Rings epic, although it looks like just such amazing things that are going on. These are actual real pastimes of the Lord. And we have to somehow or other develop a faith in the understandings of the Bhagavatam. And when we read this new section of the Bhagavatam, we have to analyze it and we have to absorb it and absorb the message which is being taught us in this Bhagavatam section. We have to analyze it. Now, the Bhagavatam is always fresh. For those of you that have been around for a period of time, we've all read the whole Bhagavatam, we've read Bhagavad Gita. The Vedic scriptures are always fresh. They're ever new. And as we grow in our consciousness, we find new directions and new vistas that we can find within the Bhagavatam. Ever new. Always subtle things that we find refreshing and uplifting. But the point of the matter is our consciousness has to be uplifted. Has to grow. So Srila Prabhupada says here that the necessity of the Bhagavatam is to actually adhere to the instructions that are being given and follow those instructions. So Prabhupada in that section here quotes that those who agree to obey the injunctions of the revealed scriptures are demigods. So those who are actually willing to follow the instructions of Bhagavatam are actually saintly, heavenly people, demigods. Unlike those people that reject the instructions of the Bhagavatam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam gives direct direction. It's like Vidyananda Maharaj describes it, that the Bhagavatam is like a traffic cop. It directs the flow of the living entities who are just a bundle of desires. Just a bundle of desires, just going every which way. And it gives a direction to the living entity which way to go. And following that lead of the Bhagavatam will ultimately lead to our ultimate good, our ultimate benefit. There's that verse, Nasta Prayashu Bhadrishu, Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya, Bhagavata Yutama Sloke, Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhakti Bhavati Naistiki. So basically what the Bhagavatam is doing by regularly hearing, we have to regularly hear the Bhagavatam, by rendering service to the pure devotees, all that's troublesome to the heart will be radically destroyed, will be completely eradicated. And what will happen is that love for Krishna will automatically develop. This is the key to the whole lot. We have to learn how to love Krishna. We have to learn how to explore the Bhagavatam, find its essence, find the different points, and then learn more and more how we can love Krishna. The first step is to understand the revealed scriptures and have faith that actually we are not Krishna. Like some of these people in the Yadu dynasty here actually thought they were really something else and that they were part of Krishna's family, and it's said here that they had in themselves inconceivable strength and potency. So being part of Krishna's family, they became really puffed up. Now, one of the considerations of understanding Bhagavatam is that you have to understand that, firstly, you are not God. Not God. And that we have to render service to God. It will follow that it will work out, that eventually you will develop greater strength in loving God over a period of time. The messages of Bhagavatam are slowly revealed. It's a gradual process. But we have to require faith. It has to have faith. Now, Krishna also, it's purported in this verse also that Prabhupada says that, or the devotees here say that we can actually understand that the Lord promises that he will give protection to those who are favourable. So by rendering favourable service, by actually having faith in Bhagavatam, Krishna will give you protection to actually lead you back to the spiritual world and back to loving him in full. Classic example of that is recently I had the opportunity of doing some service and in presenting Krishna consciousness to Shaivite sannyasi, who was an interesting person because he's a prominent member of the, or representative of the Hindu community within Melbourne. And he wanted to have a meeting with me and discuss some things about an interfaith project where people of all different faiths come together. It's a huge project that's happening in Rye initially. And also there's a worldwide seminar of interfaith connection happening here in Melbourne next year. Now, principally, he's been the person that's been representing the Hindu community. And he was always hoping that somehow or other the devotees would also lend some assistance to this project. And Aniruddha and myself have been discussing this and said, yeah, we'd be interested in actually communicating. So I had the opportunity of meeting the sannyasi, Sankarananda Swami. And I went to his ashram, Shaivite ashram, and it was very nice and they were very hospitable. But just on this point of how Krishna actually protects his devotees, it's just really amazing. You know how in the early days there were many devotees that left ISKCON due to different difficulties. And one of the prominent ones that left, one of the very early disciples of Srila Prabhupada, was a gentleman called Achyutananda. Everybody know Achyutananda? Our songbook is actually his work. And he, Songs of the Vaishnavacharyas, if you have that, Songs of the different Vaishnava tunes and that, that all comes from Achyutananda. He was a very young devotee and he came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada personally looked after him. His mother was very concerned about him because I think he was only 16 or so, 16 or 17 when he first came to Krishna consciousness. And he was a skinny little boy and Prabhupada used to feed him sandesh every morning to make sure that he had plenty of weight. Anyway, so his mother was pleased that he was being looked after nicely. Anyway, somehow or another, when Prabhupada left the planet, he felt lost and left the association of devotees to the extent that nobody knew where he was, and you know they were wondering what the heck is going on with Achyutananda. He was somebody reported that he may have been a doorman at a hotel in New York. So from a high position, he'd come down. Would you like a glass of water? There you go. So from a high position. Is that better? Yes. Just keep it near you if you need it. So from a high position, he fell to a pretty low position and forgot about Prabhupada, about the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and spiritual life. Anyway, nobody heard from him. So last week, Bhakti said, gee, remember those songs that, you know, Achyutananda used to sing? They were the songs of the Vaishnavacharyas. They were so nice. I wonder where they are now, you know. So we searched the internet, downloaded it and started playing them on at Gopal's, you know, all the different prayers that we sing. And everybody was commenting. There were some people saying, gee, are these tapes available? And we started to wonder, where is Achyutananda? So anyway, getting back to the story, I was with Sankarananda Swami and we were relating about how we, you know, what role the devotees could play in this interfaith symposium and, you know, how we could do things. And he said, would you mind giving some lectures and would you mind doing kirtan and prasadam distribution? And of course, you know, on behalf of Aniruddha, I said, yeah, no worries, we'd be more than happy to do that. You know, oh, thank you, that would be a great relief, you know. So he said, by the way, he said, do you know a devotee, a person by the name of Charles, who lives in New York, who used to be a devotee? No, maybe. Charles Backus, maybe? No, no. Well, he said, this devotee is a cousin, is my cousin's husband. And he used to be Hare Krishna, way, way back. I said, oh, really? That's nice. Yeah. He said, hang on a tick, I'll ring him up. So this was in the afternoon. It was about... And he said, oh, it's only about 11:30. He should be still awake.
When was this?
Just the other day.
Yes. Is he a sannyasi now, Master Charles?
Huh? No, it's not Master Charles.
Okay.
No. He's also a disciple in the same lineage.
Yeah.
But no. So Sankarananda rings this person up who is his cousin's husband. And he said, hey, Charles, I've got this Hare Krishna sitting in front of me here. You know, and I was wondering if you might know him. He said, what was your devotional name again? And he says, Achyutananda? Oh, Achyutananda. Oh, really? Here's Bhakta. Hi, Achyutananda. Hare Bol. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, glory to Srila Prabhupada. And I explained to him how I really enjoyed his kirtans and that were now playing their gopals and all that. Oh, that's wonderful, Prabhu. And he was asking about my spiritual master. He said, by the way, I just met Jayapataka Swami at the New York Rath Yatra. I went and attended the Rath Yatra and had time with them. And he was coming back to Krishna consciousness. And Krishna made the arrangement just to put it out there that there are devotees that are concerned for you, you know. So this was a really wonderful thing. So it all revolves around this point that if we have faith in the Shastra, if we have faith in Prabhupada, you know, and if we follow the instructions that are there in the Bhagavatam, no harm will ever become to us, you know. It'll always, we'll carry on.
Is that Shankaranand from Mount Eliza?
That's right.
Okay.
I went to his ashram.
He wrote a few books.
Huh?
He
gave me one of his books too.
Which one was it?
States of Higher Consciousness. Okay. Interesting. Very interesting to read. A good reference book for the Bhagavatam.
Did you give him
a
book?
Huh?
Did you give him
a yes, book? I certainly did. I gave him Devamrita Swami's book, In Searching for Vedic India, and he really appreciated that. And I also gave him Korma's cookbook.
Oh, good.
So. He had the Bhagavad Gita already. It was a very interesting meeting, and he's very inclined to actually allow us to also help in presenting our philosophy. Not that we water it down, that he knows. I said, Maharaj, I'm more than happy to work with you, you know. But you know, between the Vaishnavas and the Shaivites, there's always some differences of opinion. He said, oh yes, that's alright, that's just banter between us, as long as we can establish that we're all transcendentalists making our way to spiritual enlightenment. I said, yeah, no worries. He said to me, when I'm with a personalist, I can be a personalist, and when I'm with an impersonalist, I'll be an impersonalist. I said, okay, Hare Krishna. Anyway, so that was good. Exactly, yeah. So we have to develop faith. So in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada describes, Krishna is actually talking about the divisions of faith and having faith, and Prabhupada explains how faith is very important. And in that section of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada describes faith in two different ways. First, he uses the Sanskrit word nishta and defines what nishta means. Nishta is actually the star is the derivative of standing, or station, st. And the knee is down, so grounded in. So grounded in, or being very stationary, being very fixed, is nishta, that's faith. And the other word that's often used as faith is shraddha, shraddha, faith. And basically, Hridayananda Maharaj describes that shraddha means basically placing the heart or putting the heart into it. Placing one's faith means actually really absorbing yourself and putting your whole heart into something. That means completely knowing it, following it, and really pushing it to completion. Really being really fixed and grounded.
Full surrender.
Full surrender. Hence, following the Srimad Bhagavatam instructions is of utmost importance, because it's by this that one develops that faith. And there's a section in Chaitanya Charitamrita that I was reading the other day where Lord Chaitanya himself actually says, I'll just read it out to you. It's in the first part, and this is where Lord Chaitanya is talking to Sanatana Goswami. It is by good fortune a living entity develops faith in Krishna. He begins to associate with devotees. So when you're hearing Bhagavatam, you're associating here with Narad Muni and all the great sages, all the great kings. And also, when you're reading with a group of people, you're also associating with them. So it's by good fortune that a living entity develops faith in Krishna and begins to associate with devotees. When one is encouraged in devotional service by the association of devotees, one becomes free from all unwanted contamination by following the regulative principles and chanting and hearing. So this is the natural consequence of it. When you hear these instructions, you want to follow, and then there's directions on how to follow, and those are following the regulative principles, chanting and hearing. When one is freed from all unwanted contamination, he advances with firm faith. When firm faith in devotional service awakens, a taste for hearing and chanting also awakens. So the more you read Bhagavatam, the more you become enthused to do more and more. It becomes awakened. There's a real love for it. As the taste awakens, a deep attachment arises, and from that attachment the seed of love of Krishna grows in the heart. When the ecstatic emotional stages intensifies, it's called love of Godhead. Such love is life's ultimate goal and a reservoir of all pleasure. So this is Lord Chaitanya telling us that by simply having faith, by allowing the pastimes of the Lord to wash over us, we can understand that it brings about a revolution in the impious lives of the misdirected world. It's that so potent. And as I said, some of these points that are being made in the Bhagavatam at a particular time, we may not understand them so well. They may be confusing to us. We may still have some doubts in different things, but we just allow those things to wash over us over a period of time. I know as a devotee growing in Krishna consciousness, there are many times where you read something in Bhagavatam that just didn't gel at the time. And you go, oh gosh, I don't want to be offensive to Prabhupada and I don't want to be offensive to the Shastra, but this just doesn't hit right with me at the moment. And a lot of people actually, you know, sort of, oh well, I can't understand it. But if we allow it to just, if we allow the instructions to just wash over us, then in due course of time the truth will be revealed to us and it'll become obvious to us. That has happened so many times upon reading the Shastra. One point that I always had a difficulty with was this point of capital punishment. Because prior to being a devotee, I was really anti-capital punishment. You know, when a person has committed a horrible crime, a murder or such like, the Shastra says it's quite legitimate that that person is killed, is executed. So I still find that difficult. And just recently I was reading in the first canto about how Yudhisthira also with Rukmi, was it, no, it was, Ashvatthama, yeah, how Yudhisthira was actually completely against killing him, and so it was Draupadi was also completely against killing him. And there's a whole purport there where Prabhupada shows that by actually ostracizing this guy, by locking him away, by shunning him from society, it was as good as killing him, by degrading him. So in different ways we just have to allow the Bhagavatam to wash over us and in faith understand that this is ultimately it will be revealing to us. So faith arises in three phases, as is mentioned here in the purport, in goodness, passion and ignorance by the modes. So anyone's faith is born in their nature. So what you are by nature is what you will have faith in. Say for example, the analogy is given if you go to an optometrist, and those of you that have got glasses, the optometrist sits you in front of the eye chart and puts different glass, you know, different lenses in. So each person has a different perception of that eye chart. So similarly it is with faith. But faith inevitably arises in all of us. Every one of us has faith in something. You know, even the gross materialist has faith in something. You have, say, for example, the example of an astronomer. Now, there's no way that he can possibly see all the far-off reaches of the universe. He can't. But he has faith that those universes are there. Whether rightly or wrongly, he places his faith in his study, in his research, that those universes exist in that way. Similarly, you have people that have a false faith. Like, say, for example, the scientists that believe in the evolutionary theory of Darwin, that man evolved from animals, from apes and so on and so forth. Again, they have this incredible faith that this is the truth. So, and in every way, in different ways, we have faith in so many ways. And it'd be foolish not to have faith. If somebody says to you, do you know of Portugal? The country Portugal? And do you believe that Portugal exists? Now, every one of us believes that Portugal exists. But who's been to Portugal? Has anybody here been to Portugal? No. But we agree that it exists. So we have faith that somebody has told us. So in the same way, the Bhagavatam actually gives us information and it requires just a little bit of faith. So the devotee puts faith in it. And then with that faith, one becomes incredibly one-pointed, really fixed in their understanding. And over a period of time, with constant, repeated reading and repeated association with the verses of Bhagavatam, one becomes really fixed, one-pointed. Classic example of that one-pointedness is Srila Prabhupada. Incredibly fixed in his understanding of the Bhagavatam, incredibly fixed in his love for Krishna, and incredibly one-pointed. Prabhupada used to say that there is one flag for the devotees, for ISKCON. There's one shastra for mankind, and there's one work for mankind, and that is service to God. So there's one flag ultimately for the world, there's one shastra, which is the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and there's one service for mankind, and that's service to Krishna. He even went to the extent where Prabhupada actually fashioned a world flag, you know, and it's an oval lotus with ISKCON in the middle, and that is the flag that Prabhupada designed. So whatever we put our heart into, whatever we really believe, becomes us. So the classic example, again, at the moment, because we're all hepped up about the Olympics, and there's so much activity about people winning gold medals and so on and so forth, people put their hearts and souls and all their energy and all their faith and everything in winning gold, in becoming a gold medal winner. And to a certain extent, by putting their effort in, they achieve their goals. But it's very mundane and it's very fleeting. If we applied the same sort of Olympic attitude to our devotional service and in our belief and faith, understanding the truth that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and really diligently following through on that, then we will meet with the highest pleasure, we'll meet with that greatest satisfaction. We have to apply the teachings that we hear from the Bhagavatam, and we have to surrender to the instructions and act on it. So Krishna is an amazing personality in that if we do that, if we actually put our energy into hearing nicely and then rendering the service and applying those principles that we're learning through Bhagavatam, he's such a wonderful person that he will pick a program that is perfect for you, that is absolutely correct for you. Anyone, this is the other beauty about Bhagavatam, anyone from any area, whether one's coming from passion or ignorance, whatever, if anyone, or if one is a very neophyte person or if one is a very elevated person, anyone can approach Bhagavatam. Anyone. And Krishna, and you'll get something out of the Bhagavatam. This is the beauty of this transcendental literature. And Krishna says that actually he will work out a plan for you to develop your love of Godhead, to develop your love for him. In the classic example, using that athletic or Olympic sort of theme again, Krishna is actually our spiritual coach, our spiritual instructor. He'll actually make arrangements for us to actually develop our skills to love him more and more. So say, for example, anyone can approach or go to a gym to become fit. Anyone. A young man can go to a gym and the gym instructor will figure out, okay, you can do this and you can do that, you can do so many things. And an older person can come to a gym and you say, well, you can't exactly do all that, but we can set a little program up like this. So in the same way in Krishna consciousness, we can approach the Bhagavatam, we can approach Krishna consciousness from any level, and a particular direction will be given to us by Krishna, a particular plan of action that fits perfectly with us, with who we are, what our potentials are, what we can do and contribute to Krishna consciousness. And that instruction comes via the Guru, via the spiritual master. And the spiritual master will talk to you and say, what is good for you? You know, what can you do? Oh, you can render service in this way or that way. So in that way, we have to trust, just as the athletes in the Olympics, they trust their coach to take them to such a level to obtain gold. Like, say, for example, people are amazed how all of a sudden China is getting so many gold medals, and England is getting so many gold medals. And what these people have done, the administrators of the particular countries, what they've done is they've scoured the world for the best coaches in all different fields of athletics. And they've paid them an absolute fortune to go over to their countries and train their athletes so that they will be the best. So the role of the coach is imperative to the success of the student. So in the same way, in the spiritual sense, Krishna will make the arrangement, whatever is necessary for you to get the perfect coach to train you in the love of Godhead to actually be able to achieve the goal of going back home, back to Godhead, as Prabhupada is saying here. So our spiritual master should not be taken lightly. Nothing should ever be taken lightly, as we see here, that even being born in Krishna's family, you can actually become, you know, blasé about it. And as Prabhupada points out here, you know, what was it? Inimical towards Krishna because their mundane vision, they consider themselves to be on the same level as Krishna. So sometimes you have it that the student sometimes thinks, oh, I'm as good as the coach. You know, he can't tell me anything new. You hear that often, world famous athlete or something gets to a stage where they've taken him right to, the coach has taken him right to the pinnacle, and then he says, oh, I don't need you anymore. So, in a sense, having... where is it? The great burden... Yeah, there is a popular saying that familiarity breeds contempt. So we can't allow ourselves to have that contemptuous attitude in any way, shape or form. We always have to be trusting, respectful and just submissive. And this service attitude brings about that submission. So we have to really respect the spiritual master and really understand that what the spiritual master is doing and how he is manipulating our lives and directing our lives is for our betterment, and that we can grow to fully loving Krishna and having faith in the Shastra. But the important thing is that I wanted to make here is that having faith means that one has to continuously keep on reading the Shastras as a regular thing. Prabhupada made it a point that actually this Bhagavatam was the Bhagavatam and all his writings were for no other people except for his disciples and grand disciples. That the reading of the Bhagavatam should be an activity that concurrently goes on with our chanting. That as we chant, we're also hearing about and allowing the pastimes of Krishna to wash over us. And that gives us solidity in our chanting. So it's imperative, and we just have to see it in a sense, in an athletic way, that we have to have a regime. Like any of these great athletes, they don't just whimsically go for a run over this time, and then they diligently get up every morning. I mean, when you hear some of these athletes, they wake up at an early hour in the morning and train in a pool or on a running track. If they do that for some whimsical little badge, you know, a little gold badge, and they stand on a platform for 2 seconds, and somebody plays this song for them, you know, about their nation and how great their nation is, what should we be doing? You know, we're getting Krishna. We're getting free from this material world. We're getting love for God. You know, with an Olympic atmosphere, with an Olympic attitude, we should be also waking up 4 o'clock in the morning, determined to chant our hours correctly, reading the Shastras, doing our service, so on and so forth. And in that mood, Prabhupada actually wanted that militaristic attitude in our Krishna consciousness. He never liked a whimsical attitude towards Krishna consciousness. Never. You know, Prabhupada was always emphatic. If somebody wasn't coming to the temple in the morning for Mangalati, or if you have your program at home, for Grihasthas that have their program at home, still it is incumbent upon the Grihasthas to also wake up early in the morning and start their Olympic regime. Because we have a target, we have a gold medal that we want to achieve, and that gold medal is to go back home, back to Godhead, to be with Prabhupada. So we have to be very diligent And a major part of the process is this Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing and chanting nicely. So I'll stop here. Has anybody got any comments or questions?
I'd just like to say, yeah. Krishna visited me in a dream this morning.
Did he?
Yes. Oh. He said, oh, the communicator, that unless we give up cigarettes, my next incarnation should be as a lamb.
As a what?
A lamb.
A lamb. There won't be another incarnation for you as an animal.
I bet it was smoking though.
Yeah, smoking is a hard one to give up. That was the last one that I gave up.
Yes.
And and it was only Krishna consciousness that I could possibly give it up.
Yes.
I had tried, I was doing, as I've told previously, I was involved in impersonalist meditation for a period of time. And although I was doing that, I had no higher taste, really. And unfortunately, and this was, I know it's on record, but when I went to that ashram yesterday, you could actually feel it was nice and they were very polite and it was wonderful, everything. I don't take anything away from the very nice people and the transcendentalists, but there wasn't a focus. There wasn't a focal point. There wasn't a direction. There wasn't rasa. There wasn't juice. That's here at the temple, you know, with Krishna. You all right, Prabhu?
Juice.
Yeah. So that was the last thing that I gave up. And my Mayavadi teacher used to say, okay, well, you can do this type of meditation and they will get rid of it. But I was an artist. And one of the things with an artist is, after you've completed a particular work, and those of you that are creative, I used to like to stand back and have a smoke. But it was only when I became a devotee of Krishna that and reading the Bhagavatam and reading the Shastras and serving the Vaishnavas, that actually it became completely obvious to me how irrelevant and useless. And it wasn't even a point of actually saying, I'm giving it up. All of a sudden, it just didn't anymore.
What is your opinion on marijuana for transcendental?
No, it's an intoxicant. It's not natural. It's not a natural thing. People want to get relief from material suffering and thereby they go for intoxication. But the greatest intoxicant is Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Think about it. Who created that marijuana?
Krishna.
Yeah. So he created marijuana. Same with sex life. Who created sex life? Who created the joy of having a sexual experience, which is so prominent in today's society? Be all and end all. Have sex is the best. To drink and get intoxicated. That's life's goal. But who created all that? Krishna. So why don't you go to the fountainhead, to the head of the person who created it? Like Prabhupada explained, I mentioned this once before in class. When Prabhupada was teaching in New York, there would be all the hippies, you know, and they were the acid heads and the meth heads and, you know, everything. They were really out bunch of people. And the hippies would say, you know, and Prabhupada was explaining about the joy and the love and the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. And the hippies would say, man, is it like LSD? And Prabhupada would look at them and say, it's like a room of LSD. And his eyes would light up, you know. So the hippie would go, wow. You know? So if you think that there's a taste in marijuana, it is but a fraction of a taste. If you think that there's a taste and an enjoyment in sex life, it's but a fraction of a taste. And if you think that there is an enjoyment in an impersonal conception of God, it's but a fraction of a taste of really learning how to love Krishna. And really learning how to love Krishna comes about by reading this Bhagavatam, by serving, rendering service to the Bhagavatam, rendering service to the devotees, and in association becoming incredibly strong and fixed up. Diligently doing it, Prabhupada guarantees the result will be there. Krishna says, I will protect you. Okay, so it's a minor thing that will all go away. Let it wash over you.
Yes, I began to trip out while I was chanting.
Nice.
And it was a really nice place to be.
Great. And when Krishna appears in your dream, that is the only relevant time that you should take notice of your dream. Because if Krishna appears in your dream or Guru appears in your dream, they are really there. So Krishna is coming to you. And you should take up that instruction. He is picking you up and he's saying, anyone from any walk of life can come and can take shelter of this Bhagavatam and take shelter of the devotees. Anyone. I just saw this class at Prabhupada's. given up in his room here. There's a DVD of Prabhupada. And he was saying, anyone can come to Krishna consciousness. We'll feed anyone Krishna prasadam. If there's any hungry person, spiritually hungry and materially hungry, we'll feed them free of charge. Let them all come, he says. Have you seen that DVD? No. He didn't even say that. He said, let all the men and women of Melbourne come who are hungry and we will feed them. We will feed them, he said, free of charge, here in Melbourne Temple. You're free of charge.
This was his son, Jesus. Broke bread and fish and fed the multitude.
Yeah, we talked about that the last class ago. It actually wasn't fish. But he fed them. Yeah.
Yes, fed them.
Yeah.
Small
anything is possible. Anything is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu?
I want to personal how do you improve your chanting?
How to? Wow, you pick a curly one, don't you? How to improve your chanting is, again, coming back to the basics. Being incredibly regular. Incredibly regular. Don't do it whimsically. Prabhupada also suggests that the best way to chant is to chant your prescribed number of rounds in one hit. So the mood of meditation is not interrupted, because in the initial stages of chanting there may be so many inflowing and outflowing thoughts that are coming. If you just stay fixed and chant your rounds, also have an understanding that it's not a minimum of 16 rounds, not having that idea. Actually, our Sampradaya says that we should chant 64 rounds. And having a loving attitude in your chanting. Always developing a loving attitude. And you develop a loving attitude by actually finding out more and more and more and more and more about Krishna. You know? And how do you find out more and more and more and more about Krishna? Reading the Shastra. Reading his pastimes. Reading his mercy. Reading how he interrelates with his disciples and with his children. So, developing that love. Yeah, it's very
important. While chanting, you're hearing the holy name.
Yeah.
And while hearing anything else, what do you do? Just hearing only.
No. You allow the sound vibration of the holy name to come in. But then in the same token, you also really absorb yourself in that holy name. And again, as I mentioned, and this has done me so much good in the past, is understanding what the mantra means that you're saying. Just being aware of the translation of that mantra, of the Hare Krishna mantra. And in essence, Bhakti Charu Maharaj summed it up by saying, it's simply, Krishna, I love you. I want to love you. I want to love you. And if you love that person, then you serve that personality. So just having that loving service attitude, understanding your own inadequacies, but still making an attempt. I want to love you, Krishna. Because when you think about it, Krishna is so great. We're so small. You know. But yet he's willing to come to you in the sound of his holy name and dance on your tongue. And it's like we were reading from that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, eventually Krishna will come and take your hand and say, I'm coming home. So this is where we have to go. Krishna is a wonderful person. Never leave us. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu?
There's a funny point. It's a funny one. You know how if someone says, no, when there's personalness, I'll be personalness.
Yeah.
Impersonalness. I was just saying, no, when you're in water, you become water. When you're in fire, you become fire. And Guru was said, when you're in with stone, you become stone.
Actually, we're coming up to a fabulous section in the Bhagavatam, the Uddhava Gita. Have you read that, Uddhava? It is amazing. It is just so beautiful. This? It's coming up. Yep. Yes, Prabhu?
You were saying that the members of the Yadu dynasty, they were all relatives of Krishna, and they were feeling inimical towards Krishna.
Complacent more than inimical.
Krishna made an arrangement so that they can all go back. fight amongst each other and go back.
Mm.
Is it possible, like someone in this age also becomes very envious and inimical towards Krishna, and still like Krishna can protect him?
Yeah, absolutely. We've even seen that in within our movement. You know, where people that have been very, very, for all intents and purposes, very advanced devotees, and they've become inimical. And we can't understand how that happens, but it happens. You know, there's some rotten piece in their consciousness that comes up, but Krishna still protects them. You know, to the extent where, you know, even you have people that go away, but then after a period of time they will come back. Krishna will never let you go. Never let you go. Everybody's on the path. This was the thing that Swamiji was saying. We're all on the path. And I said, you bet you are. You know, we know that. We know that. They're going down the path of impersonalism, and is a transcendentalist in a sense.
He could be the journey point.
Maybe, who knows? Or Krishna consciousness, you know.
Because he did mention, I spoke to him a couple of years ago. He did want to come to the temple.
I know, he's dying to come to the temple.
He wants to come.
Yeah. So I spoke. Yeah. Well, it's a growth in his consciousness, you know, for sure. But the point of it was he's got that desire. It was really interesting. I spoke to Ani Rudy yesterday. He said, so we'll make arrangements that Swamiji can come, you know. And I said, you've got to come to Gopal's. He said, oh, yeah, I'd love to come to Gopal's. So, yeah, but anyway, as I'm saying, Prabhu, it's like animosity can be there for a period of time, but you have to understand that we're all lovers of Krishna in the ultimate end. And eventually Krishna will rectify, just as he's saying here. Like some of the demigods that took birth in his family had to take on that inimical role, but then it's pointed out in the purport here that eventually they were given back their positions as demigods, you know, just for the arrangement.
Like sometimes what happens, the animosity increases as well because of so many disturbances. Because person already inimical towards Krishna, envious, and then the situations arises that even though he tries to go closer and reduce that animosity and all type of things, the situation, adverse situation happens, and then somehow he actually increases his animosity. That can be dangerous.
That can be definitely. There are people out there that hate the Hare Krishna movement with a passion.
They're in ignorance.
As Prabhupada was pointing here, the Vedic scriptures are, where are we? Those who agree to obey by the injunctions of the revealed scriptures are known as demigods, whereas those who defy the order of the Vedic scriptures are known as asuras and demons. So it's a question of whether you are willing to obey the injunctions of the revealed scriptures. You know, classic example. In the early days, we had one big, big demon. And I only recently heard what happened to this demon. When we were preaching in throughout Melbourne, there was this one guy, if the ladies were out on Sankirtan or the guys were out in Sankirtan, he was a council worker and... There's some more here. Was a council worker, and he would always badger the devotees, right? Always. He'd hassle them and get them locked up. Korma got locked up, Gaura Gopal got locked up, and I just read that in the online. This guy was an out and out demon. Square Jaw, his name was. And if the devotees, that's what we call it, Square Jaw. He had a square jaw. And he would hound the devotees all the time. And everybody thought, oh, this guy's going to end up in Patana Loka, he's going to be rotting in hell forever, you know, for what he did to the devotees. Nobody knew whatever happened to him. And just recently I read where Gaura Gopal on Dandavats wrote his pastimes of how one day, he met this guy. After he... Has anybody read that pastime?
Yeah.
You read it? Yeah. How one day he came across Square Jaw. And Square Jaw was actually in complete admiration of the devotees. What was it, Rasa, again? He really appreciated the devotees. He'd gone to Gopal's, hadn't he? Or taken prasadam with his son. And he was so completely changed. His animosity had completely disappeared.
Yeah, but we should never actually go and be into the blazing fire. It can actually cause someone to go out of the devotional services. It can be too dangerous, you know. We can get habit reactions sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
So devotees have to be careful as well.
Absolutely.
Everyone are going forward, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Have to be very, very careful.
Not to commit offenses.
Yeah, because sometimes you are in such a good position and then you try to take advantage.
Yep.
Have to be careful.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. It's true. It's a razor's edge, you know. The path of devotion is a razor's edge. We have to be really, really careful.
When we think of pure devotee, we are getting with actually Krishna is actually reciprocating with us and getting pure. We are becoming a pure devotee. But that's when the time Krishna actually
tests you. Absolutely. But the trick is, and with everybody that I've seen over 30 years that have fallen away, the trick is their sadhana became absolutely lousy. Their sadhana slipped. They stopped obeying the injunctions of the revealed scriptures. Somehow or other they weren't paying attention in their rounds. Somehow or other their sadhana started to slip. Their Olympic program, their regime was shaken. If a devotee sticks diligently to the program that their spiritual master has laid out for them, they will not fall away. They will not become inimical. They will not become envious of Krishna. They can't. But you have to diligently stick with your program, a program that Prabhupada has given to us. You have to diligently and stick to it like glue, like an athlete. You know, we want our thing is not in 4 years' time at some Olympics. Our thing is at the end of this lifetime we go back home, back to Godhead, with Krishna. You know, that's our goal. So to do that we have to diligently, every day, follow our regime, follow the training. You know? And then we're safe. As long as we have that and have trust in the spiritual master, have trust in Krishna, have faith, surrender to the process. By surrendering it means really diligently following it, 100%, what the acharyas are telling us to do. If we do that, we're fixed, we can't, one-pointed, we can't be shaken. You won't be shaken.
Yeah, but the point is that the situation creates in such a way that even though you don't want to be shaken, you may be getting shaken.
You mean like you start to have doubts within yourself?
That's a problem, so much. Like we all have to agree that we have a conditioned soul, basically, and have our different desires, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
No, that desires, it already has, it's already there in someone. And then what happens is that so many adverse situations are getting created and you started feeling, you know, I don't want to follow this service and Lord's path of devotional service. So much, you know.
Yeah, actually the devotee, you know what that is? It's actually the mind. The mind can be our best friend and it can be our worst enemy. And the mind is telling you that and this and this and that and I should be doing here and should be doing that. You know, if there's any war that a devotee wages, it's the war against the mind. You know? And if you have difficulty that the mind is giving you problem, then you should seek somebody out that you have confidence with, that you have trust with, not necessarily your Guru Maharaj, but you have to seek someone out and speak your mind. My mind is telling me this. I'm becoming agitated because of that. I'm feeling like this. Open-minded. And then get proper instruction and help from other devotees to help you through that. What is the problem that you're seeing? Where is your confusion at the moment? You know, and how can I address that situation? How can I rectify the way I'm feeling? It's happened. It happens to all of us. You know? Yeah, Prabhu? Just the last one?
Just I want to add that the mind is like a parachute, even like it works. So we have to keep our mind open and engage every time in Krishna consciousness, otherwise the mind will kill us.
Oh, yeah.
For example of this, like, there is a genie, one devotee, like, devotee, like the genie was like he was having a genie. That genie is like he tells that you engage me in any of the works. Otherwise, if you don't engage me, I will kill you. So like the devotee told like genie, you go and do this plowing for me. Then he goes and does 100,000 acres of plowing. Then clean, and then the genie comes again, engage me. Then the devotee is like seeing, then he asks his Guru Maharaj, like, what I can do? Then that Maharaj told, like, you tell the genie to keep a ladder permanently and tell the genie to go up and down, up and down. So, like, then the person told the genie, you go, this is the ladder, until I call you, do this, that. So, that ladder is compared to our beat. So, we have to be like going up and down, thinking of Krishna. Otherwise, like the genie comes again and it lasts when we are affected to the sense objects and gradually our sadhana will be. So we have to keep our mind 24 hours engaged on Krishna with our feedback.
Very good analogy. Thank you, Prabhu. Did everybody hear that?
I heard that in Shaivananda's book as well. Same kind of theory about mind reading, really.
Yeah.
And to keep it constantly engaged, but obviously his is impersonalism.
Mm.
It was called Happy to Know the Reason.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah.
This is an example given by Srila Prabhupada. The same example is, and then a few days ago, Radhanath Sharan Maharaj, he was explaining, he was giving a lecture in India, and then he was describing the same, he was mentioning the same example again.
Mm.
So,
amazing.
According to this mind, another analogy was telling you, we can't immediately train our mind to Krishna consciousness because for the past 20-21 years we've been thinking to some engaging. So whenever that we think the picture comes in our mind.
Absolutely.
So it's very difficult. So how to train like for that analogy, like we've seen a tiger and lions in the forest, very angry, very passionate of the human flesh and everything. But the same tiger, it's in the circus, it's under the control of a master. So how they train the tiger, like they catch a tiger and they put in the circus and they will don't give any flesh to the tiger. They will keep fasting. First day, second day, third day, fourth day. Fourth day, they will open the cage, even the tiger is so tired, he can't able to stand. Then the master comes and with that rope he will hit, then the tiger is so scared, you know. Then he thinks, then he told, yeah, stand up on the table. Then the tiger will slowly stand up, then he will give a small piece of flesh. So the tiger will think that, oh, what, he is my son, he is my savior, he is my, the Lord who is giving flesh to me, so I have to obey to him. So like, we have to keep our mind like that. So when our mind goes back, we have to tap on the mind.
Absolutely.
We have to keep our mind to Krishna consciousness daily, to do regularly, then the mind will like control by us. Otherwise the mind will control us. So we have to.
Very good, Prabhu. Thank you very much. Hari Bol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.